Big show for you here today. It's all about upside. It's all about ceiling. Upside. It wins championships. Don't know if you've heard that. Chris Allen and I go through the first 12 rounds of Yahoo ADP and pick the highest upside player in each of those rounds. Listen, a lot of good picks, okay? Especially in round four. We got to do a whole discussion about the round four wide receivers and who has the highest ceiling. And folks, that was a tough exercise, okay? It's easy to say early round players have big time upside, but what about those mid rounds? That is where you truly win your fantasy football championships. And that's what we're going to discuss today. We're going to help you with that. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that. Two triumphant returns in back-to-back days. What a time to be alive. It is our good friend, our guy, Chris Allen. Chris, what's going on, man? Good to have you back on the show.
I mean, my brother, I'll tell you this. I am refreshed and ready to roll. And for two reasons here, I'll tell you why. I mean, first, as some folks can tell from my background, I've got some new digs. I mean, if you saw me on Fantasy Football Live last year, recap every Sunday night with this wonderful man sitting next to me, it looked like I was in a dungeon. My wife and I, we were trying to sell our house and get out of there and like try and find a better spot. So we got there. Although like when I was actually talking to our realtor as we were selling our house, and I was expressly told that noting my office space as the site where an award-winning podcast was being recorded, that's actually not a solid reason for people to buy the house. Like, but it's hey, not. I tried to toss it out there. No bites. But hey, anyway. I also got to take some time for us to settle into our house. And now, in doing so, I didn't have to argue throughout the spring about whether or not Devon Achane is still worth a second round pick because he has to work with Malik Willis. I could mark myself safe from the Luther Burden and Rome Odunze wars that happened throughout most of the summer. Like, I've seen all that stuff wage across my timeline. I was away from all of that. So now I get to slide back into the co-host or guest chair, kick it with you for a bit after spending some time with the rest of our brethren in Canton. So like I said, I'm ready and I'm excited to talk ball with you again, my man.
Well, two things here. One, I'm just going to go ahead and cross that off the list of potential selling points with this piece of property here, because I did think that would increase the value of the home, but I guess not. Hopefully we still bring value to you all, and we're going to do that today because, Chris, buddy, saddle back up. We're going to do a lot of debating, a lot of back and forth on some players today, and the particular debates we're going to be having is who are the highest upside picks in each round of Yahoo ADP right now. That's right. We're going to be building the all upside team here, essentially the highest ceilings in each round. Because guess what, folks? Upside wins championships. Don't know if you've heard that. I don't know if you've heard that from any particular fantasy analyst lately, but it does seem to be ringing throughout the halls of fantasy football lore at this point. So Chris and I are going to go round by round. We're going to alternate through 12 rounds here and 12 players to pick the guys with the most upside, essentially, who are going to be the ones that are responsible for the fantasy championships this year. But before we do that, we do have some news for you all out there. Yes, Stephon Diggs has finally signed a one-year deal with the Washington Commanders. So cue up a little fantasy fallout from this one here, Chris. This is a move that we all expected to kind of have go down for a while now. Honestly, it looked like there was not that many seats available for Diggs, and it kind of felt like, hey, the Commanders are going to go into camp and see what do we got from our young guys, right? Like, is there a Treylon Burks revival? Is Antonio Williams ready to start right away as a third round pick? Looks like the answer is no. Because they went ahead and get Stephon Diggs here, who is from the DMV area, actually. He played ball at Maryland. He's from the area. He's been working out here. So doesn't have to do a lot of commuting to get to Washington to play for the Commanders here. What is your reaction to Diggs going to Washington now that it is officially official?
It made sense the moment I heard that the news was dropping that he was eventually going to wind up signing with the Commanders. And then 2 minutes later, the deal actually goes through. Because if you looked at their their current personnel, it just seemed like he'd be the type of player that slots right into their receiver core. Because, yeah, was it cool to see Treylon Burks kind of have that revival that you mentioned earlier towards the back end of last season? Absolutely. That probably got him kicking around on a couple of dynasty squads where it's just, I'm being too stubborn to let it go. So having him go on there, like seeing him like show up. But of course, I mean, look at the other guys. I mean, that they've got still sitting there, like Van Jefferson, Deami Brown. I mean, even Luke McCaffrey, that some folks were thinking could turn into something. It didn't seem like this offense with its personnel was going to match some of the hype that we're thinking about coming into the season, because Jayden Daniels is coming back healthy. They add to their running back crew, which I know we'll probably talk about later on in this particular show.
Certainly.
But there's been enough there, that nucleus in the offense, to generate some hype over the last couple of seasons, especially with their change at play caller. Is this the year that they can try and get back to something or be something of relevance within the NFC East? I think so. But I mean, there needs to be some sort of power behind that receiving or that passing game out alongside Terry McLaurin. So I think him playing still on the outside, having Diggs being able to work as the Z or more in the slot, I think that kind of that those two complement each other really well. So I think, again, looking back on it right now, hindsight being 2020, this makes absolute sense.
Yeah. I mean, it just felt like a kind of inevitable essentially here that Diggs was going to land with this team. And I think it's a great move for all involved here. You mentioned that Washington certainly needed the help. This does put a little damper on year one expectations for Antonio Williams. That's definitely the case. You know, I mean, there's no doubt about it. A guy that, you know, is certainly someone in dynasty leagues I still want to have. But, you know, Boone and I were really excited about him the night after round two of the draft. And we are going to jump back in here and kind of adjust those expectations at this point. But otherwise, like, yeah, there's a lot of opportunity in Washington for someone to step up and immediately be a contributor. Diggs, I think, can absolutely still play. I mean, last season, he was like a top 10 receiver in yards per route run against man coverage, which I think the film backs up. Like, he can still get open. He can still separate in the short to intermediate area at an extremely high level. They needed kind of a layup producer. So Diggs right now for me, Chris, I have him as my 94th overall player, wide receiver 42. I could hear an argument that the guys in this tier, for which for me is kind of that like Michael Pittman, Quentin Johnston, Stephon Diggs, Jordan Addison, Mekhi Lemon, I can hear an argument that he should be the top there. Like, he should be closer to wide receiver 40, wide receiver 39 maybe, but very much a viable late round draft pick is Stephon Diggs, mid round draft pick maybe if things go well. Does this cause you to move Terry McLaurin down at all? Because I had him at wide receiver 20. I think I'm right now going to leave him there. But do you think we need to maybe move McLaurin down at all in wake of this news?
My knee-jerk reaction is no. And the reason I'm thinking about it in that manner is because of how he's typically been used on the field. Mm-hmm. He's been still there, perimeter, like primary X receiver, the guy that's being used downfield. And Jayden Daniels has still been able to connect with him multiple times throughout the season. Now, do I see McLaurin hitting the same highs from a touchdown standpoint like we saw a couple of years ago? No. But can he still be that type of player that when they still need to create explosives, is he going to be on the other end of those passes? I can see that happening. If Jayden Daniels gets into those pressure or obvious passing situations, will he still look to Terry McLaurin as he had back in like the 2024-ish timeframe? Yeah, I can still see that happening as well. So the usage for Terry McLaurin, I don't think changes things, because as I think we can both agree, both the way that those two operate on the field, McLaurin and Diggs, they complement each other versus canceling each other out. Mm-hmm. Now, the one guy I would say would be impacted by it would be guys that operate in the middle, short to intermediate parts of the field or across the middle, like Chigga Okonkwo that just came. A lot of folks are looking at him as like that late round tight end that's going to be out there running routes, catching a few passes here and there. The prospects of his outlook now change. And even the running backs, the guys like Rashad White that were going to be those pass-catching type RBs that we would want to target in the middle to late rounds, puts a damper on their output as well. So Terry McLaurin, just because of where he's typically used, I'm not moving him down just yet. But I would say for right now, over the next couple of weeks, let's see how things start to develop in camp. Let's see where he's like, if there are any more news that would make me change my mind. But for right now, I think McLaurin, where he's drafted right now, like that fourth, fifth round, somewhere in there, I think is fine for his price.
Yeah, that's my initial instinct as well. I mean, the reasons to be excited about Terry McLaurin were threefold this year, in addition to the fact that he's healthy and not coming off a contract dispute. One, Jaden Daniels is healthy and he's back. Okay, that's obviously still the case. Two, I think Washington's offense is set to be pretty dynamic and pretty potent this year. If anything, adding a true secondary threat actually will help that equation. And then three, it's that Terry McLaurin is going to get the most dynamic, I think, deployment and move around role of his career. And I don't think Diggs really affects that either. I mean, because again, the bar to clear for Terry having a more dynamic pre-snap role is just so low compared to what it was with Cliff Kingsbury, because nobody moves their receivers around less than Cliff Kingsbury. So it's going to be more movement-based this year regardless. But even still, like, Diggs last year was a 52.3% slot alignment player. I think he can play outside a little bit. So it's not a pure slot option. McLaurin will still get some reps from the slot. He'll still get some reps off ball because Diggs is so good against man coverage. Ultimately, I think that doesn't really change the course for Terry McLaurin either. So Diggs officially kind of a top 100 player for us in fantasy football, a, you know, 9th, 10th round type player in fantasy. And then Terry McLaurin, for me at least, is not moving down the list. And Chris, this just makes me want to draft more of Jaden Daniels as well. He goes early in Yahoo drafts in particular, but right now I've got him locked in as my QB4. I could hear an argument that he's QB3 ahead of Joe Burrow. Just really good year ahead for Jaden Daniels as long as he can stay healthy.
No, I agree with that. And those are the types of quarterbacks where you need not just the passing portion of it, but also the rushing. And of course, Jaden Daniels comes with the rushing part without a doubt. So now if he has more options to continue to buoy his passing production, now with an extra option with a guy like Stephon Diggs, the type of guy that, you know, can go out there and get you a bucket when you need to, continue to convert on third downs, keep that offense on schedule, then Jaden Daniels becomes, I would say, an easier click from where he's drafted right now.
All right, we are going to take our first quick break. We come back, we're revealing our highest upside players in each round. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back. And my voice is back. I'm being told my microphone sounds much better. I apologize to the people out there in the YouTube comments that heard me talking through the McDonald's headset there. That is not the intention ever on this podcast. This is a high quality operation. And Chris, I'm pulling the curtain back for the people here. That's how much I care about the viewers and the listeners to this show. Anyways, let's get into it here. It's time to reveal the highest upside players in every single round of Yahoo drafts right now, or at least the first 12 rounds here. So Chris, I cede the floor to you. We're going to go back and forth here, alternate each round. You're going to get the first round. Who's the highest upside player in the first round of Yahoo drafts right now?
All right, round one. All right, let's do this. So it might have been our favorite, or everybody's favorite, Uncle Sigmund Bloom, the mayor of Narrative Street, that said elite talent comes at the intersection of talent and situation. And in the first round, there's no question that you need both. Because I heard you and our guy, Ray G, talking about Jonathan Taylor yesterday when looking for some of your favorite plays out of each round. And you mentioned how the Colts were a juggernaut of an offense and JT just being this absolute stellar runner. So again, talent, situation. So if I'm looking for a guy with the skills at the position along with the situation, I don't know who I'd pick. I mean, you really got to search some of those wide receivers in the first round in order to figure out who would really fit into that type of archetype of wide receiver. No, man, I'm kidding. It's Jamar Chase. Come on, come on, y'all. All right, let's not kid a kidder here. Let's not do this. Of course, I'll play the homer card. I'll get it. I will cop to it, and I'll play the okay. homer card about. But he meets those two requirements that I was just talking about, talent and situation. I mean, last season alone, he ranked 3rd in total target shares amongst all wide receivers. Top 10 in yards per route run, first downs per route run, yak per reception. I mean, insert metric here, you'd see Jamar Chase's name up towards the top. But I'd say the other thing that has really started to at least click for me, and especially, I mean, y'all see the shirt? I mean, come on. We've also seen him evolve as a wide receiver since he's come into the league, 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, that first season, 2021 season, magical season all the way up until the Super Bowl. I don't want to talk about it. More of a perimeter wide receiver, right? All those deep shots between him and Joe Burrow. Deep threat coming out, 13 air yards per target. But now, as you've seen him mold into this all-pro talent, more of a slot receiver, seeing the power, seeing the yards after the catch, seeing the forced missed tackle rate continue to pick up. I mean, all those things. I'm still remembering that game from, I think it was week four from the 2024 season against the Panthers, where he catches that slant and then winds up like pinballing off of like four or five defenders and going for like a 60-yard plus touchdown. I mean, that is the type of wide receiver that Ja'Marr Chase has been since he's come into the league. And so that's the talent, right? But also we need the situation. A healthy Joe Burrow, I'm like literally knocking on wood right now. A healthy Joe Burrow, top 10 in EPA per dropback, like when healthy. And we've also seen Burrow's pressure to sack rate go down slowly over the last few years. I know people still like to cite that, what was it, 9 sacks they took against the Titans when they went into the playoffs, that when they went to the Super Bowl. I mean, the offensive line has improved, talking about Dylan Fairchild and Marius Mims. I mean, all of those guys across the front that have now allowed him to still operate the way that he wants to, the style that he likes to play, primarily in shotgun, even though they've been discussing him playing more under center throughout most of training camp. So, I mean, all that to say, he being Ja'Marr Chase, he already has the talent. I don't think there's any question about it. He has the situation with his best friend from college still throwing passes to him. They also have that nucleus around him being able to play with T. Higgins and still have, and also Chase Brown, who's also operating as a receiver out of the backfield as well. That entire core, that ecosystem, now generates enough plays that they are knocking on the red zone more often than not against opposing defenses. So again, bring all that together, Ja'Marr Chase, talent, situation, that gives you upside. So for me, if I'm drafting in the first round, I have that top 3, top 4 pick. Ja'Marr Chase is that guy that I'm clicking every single time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have him as my second overall player right now, just ahead of Bijan Robinson. And honestly, in full PPR, I think there's a really strong argument that he should be the first player off the board ahead of a guy like even Jahmyr Gibbs. And I think Gibbs is awesome. Obviously, I think Bijan's awesome. But yeah, Ja'Marr at this point, you said it really well, man. He's just so good at everything. And the deployment change for him that has really kind of been a process over the last few years. You know, back in his rookie season in reception perception, he took 85.7% of his snaps on the line of scrimmage. Then these past few seasons, it's been like in the 60s. Like, it's something that's steadily going down for him. And this is goes back to a conversation I had with him, I think going into the 2023 season, I want to say, or maybe coming just out of the 2023 season. He really talked about how he wants to play more snaps from the slot. He wanted to like win from all different alignments. That's something they've been doing more and more with him. We showed that if we could play that highlight from training camp earlier that we had from the NFL.com, not the Ray GQ account, but the NFL, great account, Ray GQ account, the NFL.com account. Yeah, here we go. This play here that is a perfect example of why that matters so much. Like, you can see, you can't really see, but Ja'Marr starts lined out in the slot, and then he runs this out cut here, which, by the way, he's told me is his favorite route to run. And this is just like an unstoppable combination between him and Joe Burrow. And as long as Burrow is healthy, man, there's no reason why Ja'Marr Chase can't have like the best season of his career, basically at any point, man. I honestly think this is terrible analysis, Chris, but whatever. He's due essentially at some point in his career for a, you know, 20 plus touchdown season, right? Like, that he's just a receiver, talent wise, situation wise, if his quarterback can stay healthy, it's all there for him. The fact that he plays with T. Higgins only makes his situation better, because T can take those outside on ball snaps to allow Ja'Marr Chase to do all the fun move around stuff. So I think this is a great pick by you, that because this upside could come basically at any moment of his career. I would throw it back to you though with this question. You know, this is kind of the thing that's always surrounding the Cincinnati Bengals offense, is that they're more, you know, shotgun, spread. It's what Joe Burrow wants to do, get in the gun, doesn't want to turn his back to the defense, you know, do all the fun, you know, point stuff at the line of scrimmage. Okay, I get it. But there's kind of a constant push and pull that if they would just, you know, get under center more and blend the run and the pass, would their offense be more efficient? It sounds like reports out of training camp, you know, some of the clips you see out of training camp, that stuff's not going all that well for them as they are trying to install it. Do you think Chase would be better served if they just scrap all that and live in the shotgun spread world? Or would his efficiency and the overall potency of the offense actually get better if they were more dynamic as an under center, blend the run and the pass type offense? Which way would you rather, if you could, as a Bengals fan, would you rather see the fork in the road, which way would they go down?
I would prefer that they continue to work on trying to blend that run and pass game, because we've seen it so often over these past few years, even when Burrow has been healthier, when he hasn't, those slow starts, their inability to have essentially, if the Joe Burrow go do cool-ish, if that doesn't work, we have no backup plan. Yeah, there's really right. no other way that they can generate offense unless it's, you know, Jamar and Joe and T out there doing what they do best. And so without having that type of run game where it's not just the explosives that Chase Brown can provide, but even just from a down to down standpoint, his ability to break tackles and also like pull a couple of guys here and there, despite his like smallish or relatively small frame compared to other running backs, being able to lean on that. So instead of living in 3rd and 7, you're looking at more at 3rd and 4, 3rd and 5. Instead of taking a sack on first down, you're actually able to set up a manageable second down. Those types of situations just haven't been there for the Bengals in years past. So if they're able to actually use their either more efficient passing game by involving whether it's play action or even with the reintegration of Eric Aull, the tight end they drafted a couple of years ago, having more of those guys available to them, like my hope is, this is like my pie in the sky dream, Matt, if I'm being quite honest with you, because Zach Taylor is supposed to be like the Sean McVay guy, or so he comes from that tree because he had a cup of coffee with him however many years ago and then the Bengals wound up taking him. It's, can he also learn from the things that McVay has been doing? Because if this, you know, 13 personnel having multiple tight ends on the field thing has become such the so in vogue over this last offseason, can they start to involve some of their tight ends a bit more? Act like they're giving Joe Burrow a bit more of that, those max protection type of looks, because you do have all back. You do have, whether it's Juice Sample, whether it's, I mean, Tanner Hudson, whether it's, I mean, insert any of the tight ends they've carried over the past few years. Can you create some of those looks so that instead of having your typical 13 personnel where it was back in the day of Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and then Tyler Boyd, or now it's Andre Yoshivash, can you have just Chase and Higgins on the field with a couple of tight ends and still allow for Chase to do his thing and create some of those explosives downfield by switching up the looks for the defense instead of your static three wide receivers on the field? So I would like to see more of that innovation. I would like to see more of that evolution of this offense, but still having Chase as your lead guy, because that would allow him to free him up for some more of those same looks that we've seen year in and year out, and also allow the offense to continue to at least be a bit more, let's say, in rhythm with itself versus, all right, Burrow, go and do your thing, create some magic, and then Chase, you do the same thing, Higgins, you do the same.
Yeah. I would like to see it too, and I do think it comes down to Joe Burrow is a big part of it. Like, does he want to meet these guys in the middle? And yet, you did bring up the Zach Taylor thing, and I typically default to kind of being like, hey, you know, Zach Taylor probably wants to do this stuff, and the quarterback doesn't really want to do it, so he does what the quarterback wants to do, because you should do what your great quarterback wants to do.
Yeah, what else are you gonna
do? Same time, like,
yeah.
Right? What's he gonna do? Play Jake Browning. We know how that goes. I mean, he's on the Bucks roster now, but Zach Taylor also gets his coaching roots from kind of like, I mean, he was on that Dolphins staff with like Joe Philbin and Mike Sherman, like very old school West Coast Packers guys. So, you know, maybe he doesn't have these tricks in the bag. So I would love to see it, but I think even if we don't see it, Jamar Chase is set up to crush in fantasy football as a super high upside first round pick. All right, let's go to the second round here, and I'll pick a lot of good names in the second round, man. The second round is really enticing at all different kinds of positions here. And yet, as I'm looking through round two, essentially, you know, picks 20-ish to 24 ADP-wise, there's a name that just really stands out to me. Pick 13 to like pick 24. And the name that really stands out to me, despite the fact like there are running backs I really like here, it's got to be Brock Bowers. It has to be Brock Bowers as the upside swing here, because I do think that there's a tier one of tight ends, which is obviously him, Trey McBride, and Colson Loveland. But I think if there's one guy that could this year make it like a tier of one, actually, and I am a massive difference maker at the onesie position, I think it is Brock Bowers for a lot of different reasons here. One, he is the actual type of tight end, Chris, and it's so, so rare that this guy actually exists, that can really win from multiple alignments, you know, can really be a downfield type of presence from multiple alignments since he came into the league, or at least, yeah, last two seasons, 2024 to 2025, 1.82 yards per route run from the out wide and slot position. He is behind guys like George Kittle and Colson Loveland, which, okay, those guys obviously are ballers too, but the amount of targets that he has gotten as an out wide or slot receiver, the targets go 57 for Kittle, 48 for Colson Loveland, 167 for Brock Bowers. Obviously, Trey McBride has been great at this. He has 197 such targets the last two seasons. But the average depth of target is 5.77 for Trey McBride. It is 7 air yards per target for Brock Bowers. If you just want to look at true out wide snaps, again, 1.98 yards per route run for Brock Bowers with an air yard per target figure of 8.6. 47 such targets, which is behind only Travis Kelce in the last two seasons combined. I mean, he really is the rare, you know, tight end who can not do wide receiver things, but can win from multiple alignments for a team that has, you know, some interesting receivers, but receivers who aren't getting great reviews out of training camp so far. You know, Jalen Naylor's, the Trey Tuckers, the my guy Jack Besh, not looking so great right now. Like Brock Bowers is just set up to crush this year from a target perspective. And, you know, if this offense is half as good as what Seattle's offense was with Clint Kubiak last year, I think at least we're going to get an... here's the deal. Even if it's not that good, it's going to be an efficiency boost from what we saw last year when the coaches were just pretty much completely disengaged there in Las Vegas. So I think Bowers at a ADP of 20th overall could be one of those guys that just totally stands out from the field this year.
Oh, and I 100% agree. And I'm typically not into early round tight ends, but since we're talking about ceiling here on this show, I mean, he has to stick out as that guy that can at least exceed his draft cost. So I saw a tweet a few weeks ago actually referencing some work from our good buddy Rich Rebar, and he said simply put that the tight end one over the last 5 years has been the leaders in routes run, which kind of makes sense intuitively because if your play caller wants you out there getting cardio, you should at least expect to see some targets coming your way, unless you're TJ Hockenson. But still, if I took that same study but then just kind of expand it to look at, well, what happens with the top three tight ends, and that's kind of like try and find a way to compare them to wide receivers that typically get drafted in the same area. Average wide receiver rank for top three tight ends has been about the wide receiver 9. So that works for where Brock Bowers is currently being drafted at. I think if you compared him to the wide receivers being drafted, he's like wide receiver 8, 9. So it's a solid bet just on its face. But then also, if you look at the profile of elite tight ends over the last 5 seasons, about a 20-21% target share from an efficiency standpoint, around 10% like first downs per route run, 1.79 yards per route run. I mean, and you mentioned Bowers, like yards per route run from being outside. I mean, he smashed pretty much every one of those metrics in the 1 year that he was healthy, his rookie season. So now if you're telling me that he's going to be back healthy, he's got one of the better play callers in the league, and also, let's say, a potential, I would assume it's going to be a quarterback upgrade between either Kirk Cousins or Fernando Mendoza. I mean, sign me up for Brock Bowers like in the second round just because of the talent, again, that we know that he has based off of his rookie campaign, but then also the situation that we know should be better, at least compared to what he's had over the last two seasons.
Yeah, I mean, the situation is definitely it'll be better almost no matter what. But the thing that makes me feel really good is, you look at a game where, like, when he came back off of injury, right? He comes back off of injury in week 12 last year against the Jaguars, 3 touchdowns, 13 targets, 12 catches. And man, he was just all over the place, you know, like from all different formations, 44% of the team air yards. I mean, he has multiple games last year, 44% of the air yards, 55% of the air yards, 59% of the air yards. That just doesn't happen for the most part at the tight end position. I think it could happen once again in this offense with Clint Kubiak and, definitely some level of improved quarterback play. I think him and Fernando Mendoza can have a good connection over the long run. Let's get to the third round here, Chris. Who has the highest upside among any third round pick right now?
I mean, the guy with the highest upside that's going in the third round, it has to be Malik Nabers, at least for me, because if there was an injury setting that we could turn off of this game that we play, Nabers would be like a 1-2 turn guy at minimum. I mean, but his injury history and the news about during the earlier parts of the season, I think, what was it, that charity softball game he's playing in where it showed him limping around for a bit. Yeah. I mean, all of those things were reasons why people just wanted to stay away. But here's the upside case. I mean, let's go back a couple of years ago, his rookie season. Malik Nabers, he led all wide receivers in target share, not just the guys on his team, all wide receivers. And so we were at least quickly introduced to how well his college game like translated to the pro style. I mean, he was playing pretty much all over the place. I mean, for all of Brian Daboll's faults as head coach, making sure he got Nabers on the field, but also moving around the formation wasn't one of them. About a quarter of his routes from the slot. I mean, you saw him used, I mean, the route diversity was there. Everything from screens and slants to intermediate post routes and everything. I mean, I was also especially impressed to see how well he was able to perform despite who was under center. Because remember, like in that season, he had Daniel Jones, he had Drew Locke. I think he even had like a game or two with Tommy Cutlets under center. But it changed his efficiency from a receiving standpoint. I mean, if you look at his efficiency just on timing routes, so like comebacks, outbreakers, hitches, I mean, he stayed above like 3.0 like yards per route run when it was mostly like Daniel Jones and Drew Locke. So that ability to be this like all pro level type of route runner, we've seen that pretty much year in and year out. And even last season, so the first like three games before he went down the knee injury, it was pretty much more of the same. I mean, he was at just over a 30% target rate before he went down with injury. And we've seen enough out of Jackson Dart to say that, yeah, brother, can you please just try and protect yourself as you're out there running across the field or something along those lines? But at least the passing acumen is there from Dart. So again, if I already know the talent, or at least I have a good indication of what Malik Nabers is from a talent standpoint, and we at least believe that the situation is solid enough, like Dart is a good enough passer to continue to feed Malik Nabers, then again, out of the third round in terms of upside, I mean, yeah, Malik Nabers all day long for me.
Yeah. Look, I'm with you, right? I mean, I think this has to be the answer here. Because honestly, like I'm looking at the rest of the third round, picks 26 to 35, and Nabers is the 35th pick in ADP right now. Honestly, I'm behind ADP on a lot of these guys more than I am, you know, close to being ahead of it, except for Nabers and T. Higgins, the other Bengals receivers, another guy I'm significantly ahead of ADP on.
He's pretty nice.
That I think is more of like a pretty good player. I think is more of a back end second than a, you know, mid third or whatever. But Nabers I've got as a 30th overall player. So again, just a few spots ahead of ADP right now. But I think I'm going to try to present the contrarian case here on Nabers without acknowledging the injury, you know, kind of wild card here, because I think that's the long and short of it is, if Nabers is Nabers and we the guy we've seen before and he's going in the third round, it's just, if he's healthy, that's a smash. Here's just the counter argument, I guess, if we're playing a little devil's advocate, would be that a lot of what we saw in his rookie year was kind of, from a target perspective, a little bit fugazi, a little bit nonsense, right? Like they weren't running. I was having this conversation over on the Fantasy Points podcast with Scott Barrett and Brett Whitefield. And I was like, if we're safe spacing here, we're not taking anything away from Malik Nabers, who's an incredible talent and like right there to me knocking on the door of being a tier one player. We can be honest that they weren't really running an NFL offense that year with Brian Daboll. They were running like a Malik Nabers usage scam. And Daboll will do that. Mm-hmm. He'll spam one guy just over and over again, you know, from one receiver alignment and just go for it. You know, it did start out well in the first, three-ish weeks of last season from a target perspective. But there was also one game where he went completely absent because he's running the dumb Russell Wilson offense where it's all vertical stuff and all that. So where does Matt Nagy fall on that continuum? Right. I don't think this gets like now that we know Nabers is healthy, I think we can get back to being like, OK, but Matt Nagy is the offensive coordinator here. You know, and this team is probably team is probably going to be very run heavy. Dart has said that that's the idea of the offense. It's a John Harbaugh team. You'd imagine they want to be very run heavy. So do you worry at all, Chris? And again, we're playing devil's advocate here because we agree he's the highest upside pick of the third round. Do you worry at all that like we're going to come in here and see, oh yeah, Nabers is a good wide receiver one from a target perspective, but we're not quite at that like unbelievable target getting upside that he showed us his rookie season?
I think it's fair to be skeptical about that, because to your point, I remember our guy Nate Tice talking about this back in 2024 of the pre-snap motion that they were running, having tight ends lined up in the backfield, just doing so many things in order to keep the defense on their toes, and then afterwards just throwing it to Malik Nabers shortly thereafter. And that was the type of offense that they were running back in 2024. I can see how you would look at that and be like, yeah, this is kind of a Ponzi scheme that they're doing here. So I think it's completely fair to be skeptical about at least about that portion of it. But then on the flip side of that, so let's assume that, let's say, the similar like hijinks are going to be going on. They're going to try and set up some sort of scam, like from a formation or alignment standpoint, to continue to feed Nabers. Okay. Fine. I mean, I'll take that. But then on top of that, they also do have one and a half more competent players. I'm not going to fully go into being like a couple more competent players as compared to where they're at a couple of seasons ago. But if you do have at least most of a good running back in Cam Scataboo, let's say, just because his own injury history, his proclivity to running himself into brick walls, like for whatever reason. So, all right, that's what you want to do, my guy, that's fine. But if you have at least that level of competency from a running back standpoint, allowing you to, like we were talking with the Bengals, keep your offense on some sort of schedule, because you do know that Scataboo is a solid runner, like a rusher of the football, like he is good in that regard. So that at least takes some pressure off your quarterback. They did add Isaiah Likely from the Baltimore Ravens over the offseason, so that gives you at least one more competent pass catcher to work with the rest of your team that we do know, like Likely, once he's on the field, we were hoping to see more of that role when he was with Lamar Jackson, but at least here in the offseason drumbeat has been, they want to try and feature him more as a receiver. That also lends some credence to the idea that this is not going to be this Mickey Mouse type offense that we saw from a couple of years ago. But even if they do at least have the personnel to execute it better than they were at a couple of seasons ago. So I would say again, it's fair to be skeptical about where the Giants are at and how they're going to run this offense, but at least the personnel around Nabers is a bit better than what he had in his rookie year.
I think that's totally fair. Just a variable to consider here as we're weighing the injury designation and what the actual upside is. But generally, I do agree with you that, yeah, if Nabers is going into late third round, he has incredible upside there. As long as he's, 90% healthy, which we do need to still see more from him to know that that is going to be the case. But that's why we've got a long month here to go in August. Let's get to the fourth round here. And this is my round. And honestly, Chris, this one's tough, bro, because whereas in the third round, I was like, I don't know. I like anybody from the third round perspective.
It's just all downhill from here, man.
Fourth round, though, bro, like there's a lot of players that I think have a ton of upside. This in the fourth round particularly. I mean, you can make an argument like Colson Loveland might be the right answer here. He has the fourth round ADP, 39th overall. I'm a few spots ahead of that on him. I really like Colson Loveland this year. You know, there are some interesting running backs in this range, but to me, this, Chris, is just the wide receiver round. Like round four wide receivers, there are so many good picks here. So I actually want to talk this out with you as to who are the guys here. And right now we're showing my rankings versus overall ADP right now on the screen. So these are all the guys who currently have fourth round ADPs on Yahoo right now. But the wide receivers, man, Tedrone McMillan, Zay Flowers, who just got the bag, Jalen Waddle, Ladd McConkey, Emeka Ibuka, I mean, Garrett Wilson, like these are all the receivers I want to draft. I'm pretty much ahead on most of these guys. So who's the highest upside player of this grouping here? Like if I was to give you those names, which wide receiver stands out to you as the most upside? We're going to talk this out together.
Okay. So if we're going to try and break it down again, upside, talent and situation, I don't think there's any one player that sticks out talent wise. All solid receivers. Yeah. Like, yes, would I like to see Tedrone McMillan used a bit more on in breakers, have him see him a bit more from a slot perspective? Absolutely. And I hope that's the case for him here in year two. Zay Flowers, love the fact that he got paid. Absolutely. Would I like to see him used a bit more in the red zone? 100%. I think everybody would. I mean, you can throw darts or throw words at pretty much everybody. Ladd McConkey, everybody's very high on the Chargers offense this season now they got Mike McDaniel, but it's the pace concerns. It's also McDaniel is continued use of using, like, at least focus on the running game. So that can take away from his looks. And also, I mean, credit where it's due, Quentin Johnston, he actually showed up pretty well last season. Mm-hmm. So it's just like for each wide receiver, there's either like a there's no talent gap, at least that I'm seeing right here, that would say, oh, yeah, without a doubt, this is a guy that you should take. So if we just want to look at situation, two guys stick out here. First one, Zay Flowers. He's got Lamar Jackson. I mean, that's pretty simple. The other one that's sitting right behind him, Jalen Waddle with Bo Nix. I mean, this is the team that was essentially a few plays from winding up getting into the Super Bowl. Bo Nix, I mean, for, I would say, some of the criticism for where he likes to play in like the more short and intermediate areas of the field, I would say, and also allowing, or at least putting his receivers in, putting more pressure on his receivers to create after the catch versus chucking the ball downfield. That's where I would say Jalen Waddle to me is the one that sticks out, because again, if we're not looking at anybody having at least a large talent gap out of that group, I would say Waddle and Flowers are the ones with the best situation.
Yeah. I mean, look, you don't have to talk me into Jalen Waddle. He's the guy that I'm in this round, the highest on relative to ADP. I have him 20 spots higher. Like, I think he's a third round pick, not a fourth round pick. So you don't have to convince me on that. Hate that I'm making this case, as he did pick up a little bit of it, like left practice early with a little bit of like a cramping or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping he just had to go to the bathroom. No, we'll see. I don't know, but he's probably got a little bit of an injury. So there is that. That's always present with Waddle. I'm very in on Waddle. I actually think, though, the more I'm looking at this list, I think the guy that actually probably has the highest upside might be Emeka Ibuka, a player that, like, of all these guys that I could see like leading the NFL in catches this year, and he's the guy that I have second highest, you know, relative to ADP. I have him 14 spots higher than ADP. I have him 32nd overall. I think he's a third round pick, not a fourth round pick. I get that people are still creeped out by the first half, second half splits. I don't really put a lot of stock into that because, number one, kind of might just be random. Two, the full picture matters more than the, you know, split the season, this, that, and the other. And we know he was playing with injuries, and Baker Mayfield was playing with injuries and all of that. And I just can't stress enough how critical, if you guys have not been listening to the show, you know, all year long, or, you know, again, you're tuning back in August, totally fine. Like, Emeka Ibuka is getting a role change this year. The fact that he's going to the Z receiver position and not playing X as he did last year, where he was mostly an outside on-ball receiver, over 60% of his snaps outside and on the line of scrimmage in the games that I charted last year for him, basically replacing Mike Evans' role. It's just so huge. Like, Chris, this was a guy that was a big slot prospect at Ohio State. You know, he was more that Z receiver. That's the role he's going back into here. Like, you're seeing the route tree on the screen right now for him. His best stuff is all of these in-breaking routes, which is, when you're this Z receiver in Zach Robinson's offense, that's what Drake London has been the last few years. Like, you're in the slot on about 30% of your snaps, but you're mostly an outside on-ball receiver, which is what Drake London has been. And I think it's what Emeka Ibuka is going to be this year. Like, London's that guy that has that massive target upside in any single game. And I think London is a better player than Ibuka, but if he takes a second year leap, he's in the right scheme, he's in the right role. I mean, this is a guy that could lead the NFL in catches this year. I think it's a dark horse to lead the NFL in catches this year. Cause, you know, in the last variable here, Chris, is Baker Mayfield's on his, like, nobody respects me, you know, moment. He's doing the chip on his shoulder thing, you know? So I just feel like, if I'm talking, I think Waddle's the right pick, that, like, he's the best pick in the fourth round. I agree with that. But I think upside wise, I kind of think like Emeka Ibuka might be the guy that has the highest ceiling of these receivers in the fourth round right now.
So it's funny that we're talking about Ibuka and also Waddle, because I could almost make the same case in terms of how Ibuka was almost miscast within his own offense, the same way that Waddle was, like, during the early parts of his career.
Totally.
Because if you go back to like 2021, what was he like? Almost over a 50% like slot route runner in his first season, Waddle was. But then they shift him more to the outside. They bring in Tyreek Hill. So he's asked to play alongside this all-pro wide receiver. And then whether it was poor play calling, broken offense because he's catching passes from Skylar Thompson or whomever else, it's just we don't really get a chance to really figure out, well, who is Jalen Waddle and how best to deploy him. And you could probably make the same case for Emeka Ibuka in his first year. I mean, Mike Evans goes down. He gets shifted out to the outside. Baker Mayfield's also playing with injuries. We don't know what to make of this entire offense, if not from the wide receivers. I mean, Bucky Irving is also hurt. So this entire offense is broken. And without being able to see where he's best deployed at, we're kind of slicing and dicing a one-year sample that's already pretty slim to begin with. So I'm with you in that looking at Ibuka and trying to see, well, where does he perform best at? And I think we have an understanding of where that is based off of his collegiate data and also where we saw him in flashes and spurts in 2025. Then also, where does that line up with how Zach Robinson likes to deploy his wide receivers and what we've been hearing out of camp? So I think there's enough breadcrumbs here that Ibuka kind of does, like he does, I agree with you that he does shake out as probably the guy with the highest ceiling. I think Waddle will probably give people the most warm fuzzies just because we've seen it before. And folks are probably more down on the Bucs offense than they are the Broncos offense, just seeing where those two teams wound up at the back end of 2025. But I do agree with you. If there's going to be a guy that has like the most upside, I think it's either one of those two guys.
Well, yeah, I think we're in agreement there. And just to put a period on the end of this sentence here, as you mentioned, one of my big cases for Waddle is just the alignment shift. From him, you know, Sean Payton, there was a quote from a video from Coach Speak Index that came out, I think yesterday, where Sean Payton was talking about Jalen Waddle is going to be the slot Z receiver. And I just can't stress enough, as you were saying, how different that is from the last few years. 2022 to 2024, Waddle was outside on 77% of his snaps in reception perception, 81% on ball. Last year, 84% outside, 79% on ball. Huge shift incoming. And these things really matter when we're talking about receivers reaching a ceiling, which is what we think both of these guys can do here. So fourth round, full of a ton of good receivers. I'm glad we could flesh that out because it's going to be important, Chris, to get those fourth round picks right. And Ibuka and Waddle are the two ones I think that stand out the most to me. But we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got another big time upside receiver to talk through in round five. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Time to get into the highest upside player from round five. Once again, Chris, a lot of really appealing names in the fifth round of Yahoo ADP right now, but I'd love to hear who is the guy that you think has the highest ceiling of the fifth rounders.
Man, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do this one. I'll be honest.
Yes,
with
you do.
You know the Simpsons meme where all the kids are crowding around Bart and they're like telling him to like say the line and then he says it and then they all cheer afterwards. I feel like that's what every Luther Burden truther is waiting for us. They're like, say something about Luther Burden. Say he has the most upside. I feel like that's the crowd.
Say his yards per route run.
Yes. Like I feel like that. And I don't want to pour more gasoline on the fire here. But again, if we're talking about ceiling, all right, okay, before we get on, let's get the caveats out of the way because you already mentioned it. Yes, Burden's route rate like never got to a full-time starter last year. Point blank, end of story. I mean, that's it. Yes, it also took him to week 11 to carve out a rotational role, but that's not like too uncommon for rookies. We've seen that in the past. I mean, yeah, sure, he was still battling with Olamide Zaccheaus for routes, but okay, that's fine. It's the Bears offense. They're going to do what they do. But when you zoom in on that two-ish months of him being the rotational starter, that boy, things get a little dangerous, brother. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, 2.69 yards per route run over that 7 to 8 week span. 7.5 yards after the catch per reception. Those are the same stats I'm sure that most folks have been kind of touting over the summertime with all those like burden wars have been going on. And I know it's kind of a wild leap to assume that he's going to be able to keep up that level of production or that level of efficiency throughout an entire season, because I mean, there's really not too many wide receivers that are able to sustain that level of production over an entire year. That's only been three that have done it since 2015. So I'm not expecting Burden to be that. But I mean, let's look at the positives. Like, am I concerned about Burden being typecast as a slot only guy because we did see him run about a third of his routes from the interior portion? No, I'm not. I'm really concerned about that. I mean, even on his perimeter routes, I mean, averaging over like 9.5 air yards per target, 70% catch rate. I mean, solid both inside and out. Am I concerned about Chicago's offense struggling. That's entirely possible that it might take a little bit longer for Caleb Williams to really find his rhythm with Ben Johnson. But the drum season throughout most, or the drum beat throughout most of the offseason has been that Caleb Williams is working on some of the fundamentals that were plaguing him throughout the first year with him and Ben Johnson. Footwork, being able to play within structure, things that you and I noted when we would sit down on the recap show on Sundays, that it's just, yeah, if things start to break down and you see Caleb Williams scrambling, cool things are about to happen. I mean, look at the last playoff game that they played in. But
right,
you still need that down-to-down efficiency. You still need the playmakers in order for you to execute a lot of things that Ben Johnson wants to try and run, play in and play out. And so, I mean, to be clear, when we say that we like Luther Burden as a second-year player, that's not to say that's going to happen at the expense of Roma Dunze or even Colston Lovin that you mentioned earlier. But again, if we're talking about upside relative to cost, looking at how well he performed in his first season, if we're looking at the guys in the fifth round only, I'll say Luther Burden is the guy with the most ceiling.
Yeah, look, you mentioned that there's Luther Burden wars or whatever. I've said, you know, all offseason, I refuse to participate in the culture war that you got to hate one Bears receiver to love the other, because I'm very much like, I'm a big Roma Dunze guy. Like, he's in the sixth round. Like, he's looking great to me. I think he should be a fifth round pick. Here's the thing, though. I'm also about 13 spots ahead of ADP on Luther Burden as well. Like, you do not have to hate the other guy to like the other. You don't have to do it. And I really don't get the argument for why anybody would be out on Luther Burden, like, from an individual standpoint. If you like Rome more, and I have Rome ranked, I'm doing the hedge ranking, Chris. I got Rome one spot ahead of Luther Burden. But I still have, like I said, from an overall ADP perspective, I have Luther Burden 13 spots ahead of the overall ADP because, like, I want this Bears offense. Like, this offense is going to be incredible this year. They're going to be Ben Johnson year two. Caleb Williams, second year in this offense, like third year in the NFL, all the development notes that you made there, like, yeah, he's going to put this thing together. By the way, this team's going to have to throw the football, okay? Their defense is not good. They're going to be in a ton of shootout scripts where all these guys are going to get volume. And then again, the case on Luther Burden in his own right, I think is just flat out simple. This is a really talented player in one of the best offensive ecosystems in the NFL right now. And Chris, you mentioned all the, like, well, he wasn't a full-time. I don't think that matters at all, that he wasn't like a full-time player to start his rookie season. Because number one, this was a guy who was hurt last offseason. Like, this time last year, Ben Johnson was telling us how behind Luther Burden was because he missed all that time in the OTAs and mini camps where Ben is like, drilling it into these guys, you got to be at this spot, this depth, like being very stickler with the details. Burden missed all that time because of injuries, number one. And number two, he was a prospect that I'm not saying he needs to be like fully teared down and rebuilt, but he did need to be pushed because he just wasn't right and tight on his details as a collegiate player. That last offseason was part of rebuilding Luther Burden to being the guy that he is now, where they can't shut up about how awesome he's going to be, because he is going to be awesome. Like, he over 70% success rate versus man, over 80% success rate versus zone in reception perception, tethered to a really great offense with one of the best coaches in the NFL and a guy who makes plays after the catch. Like, in the fifth round on Yahoo ADP right now, that's a full like send to me. So I'm with you, Luther Burden, full upside pick here in round five. Absolutely love it. I want all these Bears, okay? You can't make me hate any of them. Sixth round here, let's go to that in terms of highest upside pick. And this one was tough for me, Chris, because there's a, you know, Bashal Tootin was an interesting sixth rounder that I considered for this. Yeah. I do think he has a really high ceiling. He might be the right answer. As I mentioned, Roma Dunze, 69th overall ADP. I've got him 25 spots ahead of that in my overall rankings. Yeah. But again, if we're just thinking pure upside, I do think it has to be Mike Evans here, because like the range of outcomes for Mike Evans is he plays five games, his hamstrings bother him all year. I'm really enjoying the substation photoshops now where it's like just the eye of Sauron staring down at 49ers practice. Yeah. the eye, the substation, whatever you want to call it, zaps Mike Evans after five games and it's over. That's the floor. But the ceiling is if he plays 14 games, he probably moonwalks into 10 touchdowns. You know, that's it. That's the range of outcomes for Evans. And if he moonwalks into 10 touchdowns and 1,000, you know, what's called 1,100 yards as the clear highest targeted player in this offense besides Christian McCaffrey, he's going to be a wide receiver one in the sixth round. So to me, a lot of cool picks here in the sixth round, but the guy that has the highest upside and the lowest floor is probably Mike Evans.
Without a doubt, and we've also seen this in years past of the guy that winds up playing in that X receiver type role for the 49ers, because if you look at where things were with Brandon, oh my gosh, look at that. So like, why does it look like that? It's just, I mean, it looks like, are they practicing in Mordor? Like, where yes, are these people? Where are they playing at? My goodness.
I mean, Mike Evans, I don't know who's got to do it, but somebody's got to take the ring to Mount Doom and throw that bad boy in the fire and this curse right now. Because, I mean, every day I feel like I get an update about the Niners injury situation. And yeah, here we go. The Eye of Sauron is just staring down Mike Evans' hamstring as he's about to run this route here.
Exactly. And the ironic part is, and more knocking on wood for me, is that through all of this, we haven't heard not a lick about Christian McCaffrey and his health, even though a lot of folks will look at him in the first round and be like, well, I'm not drafting him. Do you know how many touches that guy's had? And look at why would I take him in the first round? I'd rather.
I'm kind of surprised he wasn't your highest upside pick in the first round, Chris, honestly, because it's like this is the range of outcome. I know you had to do the Bengals thing, but this is the range of outcomes for Christian McCaffrey too. Either he's the best player in fantasy football or he ruins your season.
Exactly. And so that's where you're investing in, going back, I'll keep repeating it throughout this entire episode, talent and situation. And how many years have we just sat back and watched the 49ers just run roughshod over every single offense, or at least stay abreast with a lot of the better play callers throughout the entire season because they have Kyle Shanahan like sitting there controlling the sticks. And so now I'm getting Mike Evans playing more or less the Brandon Ayuk role from the years past, with 2022, 23, 2024, where it was Brock Purdy going from, when he was first getting used to the offense, it was more of, hey, I will dump off to Christian McCaffrey. I will use George Kittle across the middle, and I will let them continue to work after the catch. But after he got comfortable, you saw Brock Purdy's average depth of target tick up. He was almost around close to 9 air yards per target back in 2023, which is one of the higher depths of target in the entire league, but still maintaining that passing efficiency. Still top 10 or close to top 10 passing success rate EPA per dropback, because if you have guys like McCaffrey, George Kittle running across the middle, leaving a lot of that single coverage, or I'd say lesser coverage, for the guys working on the outside, that would allow guys like Brandon Ayuk to be hit for 12, 13, 14 yard gains almost every single week. And so if I'm getting Mike Evans playing that similar role in this progressive type offense, again, without the substation in mind, and we still get the healthy production from Mike Evans, then yes, out of the entire crop of wide receivers that you typically find in the sixth round, Evans has to be the one that sticks out because he's a part of that offense that you know you're going to want to invest in, year out.
Yeah, I love the point from you there about him in that Brandon Ayuk role too, because the routes that he still runs, or at least he ran really well last year, you know, when he was on the field, Mike Evans, those are the routes that Brandon Ayuk was running in that 2023 season. The overlap there is really strong. Can we pull up the projections one more time, real quick before we go to break here for Mike Evans, because these numbers here, Chris, like I last year I did the I'll eat the pen if Ladd McConkey, you know, was to have, you know, if he was gonna not get, if he was gonna have, like, there was gonna be this huge gap, whatever the bet was about him and Quentin Johnson, there was gonna be this big gap between their production. Yeah. I'm not gonna say that I'm gonna eat this pen, but I'm pretty close to saying, like, I would eat this. I'm not gonna say it. I'm not saying it. Nobody clip this. Nobody save it. But like, if Mike Evans. Yeah, no one clip it. Don't put this in the paper that I said this. There's no way that Mike Evans has this stat line, okay? 865 yards and 8 touchdowns? No way. No way. Because here's the deal. It's either going to be 302 and he's out for the season, or he's going to go for 1110 plus. That's it. That's this. I realize this, if you're doing projections, you can't do what I just did there. But the reality is, it's one of those two outcomes, okay? It's not he stayed healthy for 17 games and had 865 yards and 8 touchdowns. I'm not saying I would eat. I'd be so surprised that I would eat this pen if that would happen, because I'm a grown up now. I've matured. But I'm pretty close to saying it. So, okay. On that note, before I get myself in trouble, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking more high upside picks in every round of the draft. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We are continuing to reveal the highest upside picks in every single round. I have recovered from almost, you know, putting my life on the line again there on August 5th. Okay, it's way too early for this pen nonsense, Chris. I can't believe you made me do that. Seventh round pick. Who's got the highest upside?
I bring this out in people, man. Besides, it's the offseason, all right? I will equate the offseason to just like how the players are. I mean, we're trying to get into our midseason form as soon as possible. So it's going to be a little bit before we can really lock in and be ready to give the people what they need weeks 1 through 17. So, yeah, we got time, man. We got time. Okay? All right. So seventh round, you said? It's going to be a gross pick. But now we're getting to the part of the draft where I don't think anything looks particularly great off the board. So I'm going to go with Ramondre Stevenson here. And again, if we're looking for ceiling, I'm looking at the guy that had the RB1 job to start off the season, lost it because of injury, but almost immediately after he came back, reclaimed the role. Because the hope would be, and this was the thesis of the Travion Henderson play throughout the beginning of the 2025 season, was that, well, of course, at some point, Ramondre Stevenson is either going to literally fumble away his job, or he's going to wind up getting hurt because he's an older vet. Those things happened. Fumbled multiple times. Got hurt. Travion Henderson had the RB1 role for about a month. Immediately after that, looking at how things worked out or shook out between those two running backs throughout the playoffs, when things were at the highest stakes for the Patriots, 61% rushing rate for Ramondre Stevenson, 55% route rate, 100% of the goal line carries. This is not a tandem RB1A, RB1B type of situation. Now, the man came back and stole his job back. That's what happened, point blank. So yep. If I'm looking for the guy that has that type of upside, and actually he was talking throughout training camp, I think he was on the Kay Adams show either early this week or late last week, talking about continuing to work at his receiving skills. So if he's going to bite a bit more into the upside that Henderson has, at least that was sold to us with him coming out of Ohio State, I mean, now I'm looking at that 1A, 1B situation, but now with Stevenson playing that 1A type of role. So I'm looking at this offense now as, again, efficient offense, good situation, good ecosystem with Drake May under center. I mean, they add A.J. Brown, Romeo Doubs. I mean, the pass catchers that going through most of last season, we were hoping that Drake May would wind up having at some point last year. They get it this year. And so on top of that, now he gets a few more cracks at these money touches, because we would assume that with the increase in the quality of wide receiver, they're now going to be knocking on the door of opposing defenses more often than not. So that's where Stevenson comes into play. He's got that short yardage role. He's got that goal line role. So I'm looking for that upside in the seventh round, especially at the running back position, where we know that the pickings become a bit slim, to be honest. I think Stevenson has that upside of that ceiling play that you're looking for.
Yeah, and just because he's not as young as Travion Henderson doesn't mean there's, you know, any more or less upside with Stevenson at this point. And you're looking at a guy that, like you said, just dusted Henderson late in the year, and he could easily just moonwalk into the touchdowns there. I'm with you on this one. He's the back that they trusted in big games, and this offense is going to be, I think it will take an efficiency step back, but I think it will be a better offense this year in New England, and a guy that could have a bunch of touchdowns in the seventh round. I'm with you. Big time upside pick here. He's a guy that he's the one I have like highest ranked relative to consensus here in the seventh round. By the way, if we can just show the full board real quick, this was our first running back pick, which either tells us one of two things here, Chris. One, we did the exercise wrong. Two, the people need to hammer running. And I think this is the right answer, actually. Need to hammer running backs early, man. I mean, round one, round two, get a couple of them. I think you got to have two before you leave round three, or you start to feel like you're really far behind at running back. That's at least been my thought so far. And again, we're talking about these upside receivers in rounds four, round five, the Waddles, the Ibukas, the Burdens, the Evans, the Roma Dunes, they always talk about. And then, by the way, we're about to get into a few more wide receivers here. There's just a lot of ceiling bets at receiver that you can make, and so, so many good ones, including in round eight, my highest upside pick here is Jordan Tyson, a guy at 91st overall ADP right now. I mean, dude, this is a situation that I have been kind of rethinking relative to my receiver, my rookie receiver rankings for this year. I didn't know how high I was going to be on Tyson. I thought I'd be higher on Carnell Tate. And then the more I've looked at it, Chris, I'm like, why am I higher on Carnell Tate for this year than Jordan Tyson? I did like Tate more as a prospect, which, you know, that's a pretty big variable, but it wasn't by a massive degree necessarily. And I think that Jordan Tyson went to the perfect spot for his skill set. I've mentioned that he was number one in success rate versus zone coverage of all of the prospects that I charted, not just this year, but he's got a top five mark over the last five draft classes combined. Since 2021, all the classes combined, he is up there with like Garrett Wilson, Drake London, Travis Hunter. Like he's a great zone beater. He's going to an offense that lived in this intermediate area with Tyler Shuck. And as we're showing on the screen right now, he ran a ton of outs and digs, did Jordan Tyson. And Tyler Shuck was throwing those dig routes, the post routes at a high level to Chris Olave last year once he got under center. You know, there's so much opportunity for Jordan Tyson. They got Jordan Tyson in motion as we're showing on the screen right now. Like, he's going to be a guy that moves around at the snap, which is going to help him get away from press coverage, which he needs. And then, you know, just lastly, like, I trust this offensive ecosystem way more than I trust the offensive ecosystem in Tennessee. So Tyson is a guy that I think I'm going to be, now that he's, you know, actually practicing for the New Orleans Saints, he's actually out there with his hamstring injury, which is something to consider. Tyson is the guy I think I'm going to be moving up my rankings, but I look at this ninth round here, or eighth round right now, excuse me, and I pretty clearly think he is the highest upside, even if there's plenty of picks in the eighth round that I like.
So if you were just wanting to look for opportunity shares in the ninth round, let's look back at maybe the last month, month and a half of the Saints offense. Here are the non-Chris Olave wide receivers that Tyler Shuck had to throw to. Devon Vaile.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Austin Jr., Mason Tipton, and Dante Pettis. If you don't think that that group of wide receivers is enough to give Jordan Tyson the requisite amount of targets to hit a ceiling for what you would want out of the ninth round, I don't know what to tell you. So that's, again, the ecosystem that we're talking about, one that is rife with opportunity for somebody of Tyson's skill set. But he's also working with Tyler Shuck for, I mean, some of the warts that you would almost expect to see out of a rookie that was, you know, drafted towards day three pick. I mean, older vet, like, I get it, but Tyler Shuck, after he took the starter's job, what was it, around like week 9, week 10, still finished above the league average in EPA per dropback. And that was, again, passing to some of those other guys because he didn't really get a chance to really work with Rashid Shaheed. That trade happened almost soon after he took the starter job. So really, it was just Olave, Juwan Johnson, and that's about it. So that's now he gets to have this early round talent in Jordan Tyson, who fits the skill set that he likes to, that seems to complement what Shuck wants to do. And also in Kellen Moore's system, like the second year for Shuck, or at least a full offseason to be able to work with Kellen Moore, I think this is also going to be all positive things for both of them. So I think Tyson winds up being the beneficiary of what I can see as like a budding quarterback, at least an efficient quarterback in Tyler Shuck. And remember, I mean, I said that this is a Saints offense I think is primed to wind up being a playoff team towards the back end of this season. That's more of a product of the division that they play in. But still, I think the pieces are there for both of them to wind up showing out this season. And Tyson is that guy that I think elevates into the ceiling consideration in the ninth round.
Yeah, there's a ton of good picks again in this round. I just think Tyson has that highest ceiling. I mentioned all the Jags yesterday are in the eighth round with Ray Garvin yesterday. Oh, yeah? I just didn't want to double that up. But yeah, Brian Thomas, yeah. Parker Washington, Trevor Lawrence, a lot of upside there, of course. But all right, Chris, ninth round, who has the highest upside for you in round nine?
Yeah, I said ninth round just for Jordan Tyson. That's my fault. Ninth round now. Here, I'll look at Mike Evans' old teammate. We'll look at Chris Godwin, because almost for the similar reasons that you were talking about with Emeka Buka, is that This is also still a team situation that has been pass friendly over multiple years, like since Baker Mayfield took over as the starter. And then after Godwin came back from injury, we saw him move back into his old power slot role. I mean, moving there over 50% of his routes there within the slot. I mean, was the target share there? No. I mean, just short of a 20% target rate over the back end of the season. But I think we can all agree this was more of a broken offense than anything else. I mean, everybody was hurt or coming back from injury or managing an injury or something along those lines, from Godwin himself to Baker to Buka. I mean, all of them. So I'm looking at this upcoming season for Godwin as more or less his ability to move into that particular role as kind of the veteran wide receiver that can help build up a guy like Igbuka to allow him to see, like, how best can I start to beat some of those coverages and start to work on the interior as the Z. But with Godwin as the slot, knowing he has that relationship with Baker Mayfield, he sticks out to me as the guy that has we already know the talent ceiling for Chris Godwin, but now it's the situation with having a more as a premier wide receiver and Igbuka playing on the outside in his proper role as the Z that should allow this passing offense to really get back to, or at least start to get back to where it was at, let's say in that 2024-ish timeframe before things really started to take a nosedive.
Well, yeah, that 2024 timeframe, I mean, that the upside case for Chris Godwin is that he's back to that form, which obviously major injury did not look right in 2025. But if he's back to that form, I mean, if we're talking about, oh, yeah, Mecca Buka, and look, I'm buying what I was selling earlier, like a Mecca Buka in the Z receiver role. You know, that was kind of, it's like a Cooper Kupp-ish role, and Zach Robinson comes from the Rams. Mm. Well, I mean, Chris Godwin was literally playing the Cooper Kupp role for Liam Cohen in 2024, and before he got hurt, was wide receiver 2 in points per game behind only your guy, Jamar Chase. So there's an obvious upside case there for him. We've seen it. It just involves him, and this is what makes me nervous about it, is just it does involve him like turning the clock back a little bit. And I worry, you know, it's one of Scott Pianowski's many good lines. You know, once the cheese goes, it doesn't get unbad. And I know that he says it more eloquently than me, but, you know, it's just the general theme of it here. But I love Chris Godwin, one of my all-time favorite receivers when he was really breaking out there. So I'm hoping that he can turn back the clock and absolutely smash in the 9th round, because he has a lot of, you know, interesting picks in round 9, but I do think he stands out as somebody that has a good combination of a ceiling and a floor at his ADP as well. But we're going to take our final quick break of the show. When we come back, we've got 3 more rounds to rip through for high upside picks. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We are in the double-digit rounds now, rounds 10, 11, 12 for high upside picks here. Chris, round 10, the highest upside pick is your favorite Commanders running back. All right, I'm cheating here. I'm cheating with the combination pick.
It's cheating.
It is cheating. But
is this like the host powers that you can just change the rules and pick multiple players?
Yes. Yes, that's correct. I make the rules here, okay? All right? I make the rules. The reason that I want to paint it this way, I think probably like, because both these guys, Jacquory Krosky-Merritt, 113 overall ADP, Rashad White, 117 overall ADP, they're going in the same round, and it kind of is one of those situations where I, right now, here on August 5th, I am truly flip-flopping on which one I think has the higher shot at, you know, being the guy. I think on, you know, first look, Chris, and I really wanted to pose it this way, because honest to God, like I want your opinion here, because I am very conflicted. I think at first look, JCM is the guy that would have the highest ceiling, right? Because he's the younger player. He showed some explosiveness last year. And as I was talking about with Boone earlier this week, really efficient out of runs under center. Whereas Rashad White, maybe not so much at different points in his career. However, I mean, the reality is, like, if Rashad White's the guy who's trusted on passing downs and they trust him to just like get what's there, that's the Javonte Williams path from last year. And the reason I wasn't into Javonte Williams last year, so maybe this is me just kind of trying to work through the sins of my past here. But the reason you would get yourself onto Javonte Williams last year was trust him in pass protection. He's, you know, he's played games in the NFL before. He can get what's there. And this is an offense in Dallas last season that you should really, really be in on taking a big step forward. This is an offense in Washington that I'm really, really into taking a big step forward. At the same time, though, is it not more upside to go with JCM? Well, I mean, you know what has Javonte Williams was a high upside pick last year where he went. So where do you fall down? Honestly, Chris, I really want your opinion here. Rashad White, JCM, which one of these two do you prefer? Which one do you think has the higher ceiling?
So my preference is Rashad White, and it's not really about a talent-based bet. It's just more about the ambiguous backfield bet. And that's something that I've heard like our guy JJ Zacharyson talk about in terms of, well, if you're trying to sift through, well, who should I wind up taking or who should I wind up drafting? And at least in some cases in the past, it's been easier for you to make the bet on the cheaper guy. Not always, but again, like just looking at it from that standpoint. But also, one of the ways that I try and look at running backs is how much they're going to be used in different phases of the game that are most relevant for fantasy football. Like, are you used or can you be used or have you shown the talent to be used on early downs? Do you also have some semblance of usage in the passing game? Because we know that receptions are not just more efficient, but they're worth more, especially if you play in half point or full PPR leagues. And of course, the big one is, are you getting the money touches? Like, once you get into the green zone, red zone, is the team looking for you in order to pound the rock in? And so for Rashad White specifically, we saw that in spurts throughout the 2025 season when he was with the Bucks. After Bucky Irving went down, we saw him kind of flex into that type of role. And even when Irving was still healthier, still a part of the rotation, those two guys were kind of splitting either whether it was base down work. We saw Rashad White come in on early downs, but then also he got a little bit of the goal line action as well. Around, I would say, 11% of the team's rushes from inside the 5-yard line. So if I can see all that stacked up, and now the caveat to that being, and we both talked about this multiple times when we were talking about either Chris Godwin or Mecca Igbuka, this was a broken offense. So would they call plays the same way today with everybody healthy as they would have in the situation they found themselves last season? Who's to say? But at the very least, if I can at least point to a track record of usage across all those phases and say that, well, I can get similar type of usage or similar type of opportunities, but at a slightly cheaper price, I'm going to go with Rashad White. And that's really how I'm trying to break it down and say that that's where the ceiling might come from if things wind up shaking out that way. I'd rather make that bet at a lesser cost versus saying, all right, JCM showed out in bursts. I do think that he does have that the requisite, let's say, athletic profile and usage that we saw again in like a few weeks here and there in his rookie season that he can wind up excelling. But again, if I'm going to wind up looking at it from a opportunity cost standpoint, I'm going to go with Rashad White.
Yeah, like I said, I keep flip-flopping this back and forth in my head. It's like whoever I talk to last is going to have the biggest impact on me. Like whatever I thought about last is going to have the biggest impact on me. So, yeah. But I do think there's really good, credible arguments for both, which is why I cheated and said, just take your Commanders back here in the 10th round. Let's go to round 11 right, here. Yeah. Who is your highest upside pick from round 11?
So I'm looking at Jaden Reed here in the 11th round. And for the reasons, not just because it's an addition by subtraction or anything along those lines, because now with Romeo Doubs out in New England, there's the opportunity path for Reed to pick up a few more targets here and there with Doubs out of it. But we've seen this in years past from Jaden Reed in terms of we know that he is a high-end route runner. We know that with the ball in his hands, he's going to be one of the more efficient wide receivers that's been a part of that progressive offense under LaFleur. But it's more about, can we continue to see that build up? And can he move into that? I would say the Romeo Doubs role, but not in the way that most folks are thinking about. Because Romeo Doubs, like when he was on the field, he was the guy that on third downs, obvious passing situations that Jordan Love was looking towards. I mean, he had the highest amount of targets like in those types of situations. Even when Jordan Love was under pressure, he was looking to Doubs on some of those outbreakers and towards the boundary in order to convert, keep the offense on schedule. Does Jordan Reed have the talent profile to at least take on some of that? And I would say yes. I mean, in the past seasons of like where he's been deployed at on the field, could it be used in a way that Love could look to him in the same way that he's looked to Romeo Doubs? And I would say absolutely. Whether it's as a route runner. I mean, he has been used like out of the backfield, like here and there sparingly. But there are ways that they can get him the ball in order to get have him function in the way that Romeo Doubs has like for them in the past. So I know a lot of folks are going to be looking to Christian Watson, especially after how explosive he was throughout last season coming off of the ACL tear. Matthew Golden in his second season, what he can do now as the team's X receiver, at least looking like he's going to move into that role. But for me, I'm still looking at Jaden Reed as the guy that we've seen in the past be efficient with the touches that he's earned. And now with the potential for a role shift and then a slight step forward in his opportunity, I would say Reed sticks out as the guy that I want to try and make that bet on, knowing that he's got the talent. He also has at least the situation, at least the ecosystem from the play caller standpoint that I would want to see or try and invest in, especially once we get into the double digit rounds.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to talk me into Jaden Reed. I'm a big Jaden Reed fan. His first 2 years in reception perception just look like a guy that, hey, a couple of tweaks here and there, and he could be ready to take that next step as an individual player. And then there's no doubt he's getting a playing time bump this year. It doesn't matter about the two receiver set stuff. Like, they're going to play more 11 personnel. They're going to be throwing the football more this year. So yeah, I'm with you that Jaden Reed should be going way higher than round 11. And I think Matthew Golden is a good pick where he is going right now as well. So all these Packers receivers are in a good spot. I'll round us out here, Chris, in round 12 by basically saying it like this. My heart says that the right pick here is Jalen Coker at around 133rd overall. Great. He's a stud. He's such a good player. What if Bryce Young improves? Upside. Okay, sure. My gut says that it's Stephon Diggs at about a similar ADP. And I wrote that on the outline before he signed with the Washington Commanders. And frankly, probably a cheating answer because he's not going to be going in round 12 for too much longer. He's probably more of a 10th round pick, maybe if not 9th round pick. Heart says Coker, gut says Diggs, and yet spiritually, the right answer is probably Tank Bigsby. You know, I mean, Tank Bigsby right now is probably the best running back insurance policy on the board. If Saquon Barkley gets hurt, Bigsby comes in here and he just absolutely crushes it. So a lot of interesting round 12 picks. But Chris, Tank Bigsby, I think spiritually is the correct answer behind an Eagles offensive line that, you know, has got some changes, but still could be a very good unit this year. Chris, it is always a very good show with you. My brother, good to see you, man. I appreciate you jumping on the show. Looking forward to more content from you all year long here at Yahoo. Thanks again, brother, for jumping on the show.
Of course, anytime. And folks that haven't already, check out a couple of pieces that I've already dropped on Yahoo already, going through some draft strategy guides, do's and don'ts, those types of things. So have more throughout the offseason. But anytime you need me to come and hop on the mic with you, man, you know I'm there.
Oh, don't worry. We will be ringing your bell. That is for sure. And that is going to do it for today's show. And while today was all about upside, all about ceiling, all about imagining the possibilities, tomorrow we're going to imagine some possibilities, but a turn for the negative as Hayden Winks joins me to look at how each of the consensus top 12 players, the first round picks, could bust this year. That's right. Got to imagine some floor outcomes with all these ceilings. That's going to be live right here, 4 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Subscribe. While you're at it, like this video, do all the things. Until then, we are out.